Time for the kids to go out if you are ready and able. And if you're not a kid, you're stuck with me. Morning, by the way. I wonder if this afternoon, if I went into Marlow High Street and I asked people the question, what to you do you consider the most important event in history? I wonder what they'd say. Maybe the World War. World War I, the war to end all wars, followed shortly by World War II. Or maybe the moon landing. Very impressive. Or maybe if I came across a football fan, in particular an English football fan, maybe 1966, they would say. Because frankly, since then, it's all been a bit of a disappointment, hasn't it? Or maybe if I said to them, yeah, but what about you personally? What would you consider the greatest thing that's happened in your life? Maybe they'd say, well, graduation day. That was a day I'd always remember. Or maybe they'd say, my first pay packet. That tells you how old I am if you've got a pay packet. Now it's all back transfers, isn't it? Or maybe they say, it's my wedding day. 9th of September 1989 at 11 o'clock. That's brownie points for me. Or maybe it was the time when you held your child for the first time. Nathan was born 19 minutes past midnight on the 26th of October 2006. And I remember that. I was still awake at the time. And as he was born, they took him away to do all the bits and pieces, weigh him, make sure all his bits were in the right place, that sort of thing. And then they said to me, would you like to dress him? Now, I have to admit that sometimes I struggle to dress myself. And faced with this little bundle of humanity and actually being asked to dress him was frankly pretty terrifying. But if you've seen this morning, he actually survived the ordeal. And he's still here. And then I passed, and I had to lift him and carry him over to Angela, who'd been a bit busy up to that point. But yeah, we remember that time, and that's a big event. Or maybe for you, the biggest event is not a nice thing to remember. Maybe it's a time of sadness. But different people have different ideas when it comes to that. But in reality, without doubt, the greatest event of history is the cross. You might agree with me, you might disagree with me. But in reality, the greatest event of history is the cross. Because up to the time of the cross, everything was pointing towards the cross. And from this time of the cross onwards, everything has been lived in light of the cross. Whether you accept that or not, it is an undeniable fact. Now, some people, if you talk to some people, they would say, well, the cross was just a bad set of circumstances that came together. And things just got out of hand. Well, not according to what God says. The cross was planned even before the world was created. And it was prophesied right from the start of creation. In Genesis 3:15, we read this. And I will put enmity between you and the woman. This is God speaking to the serpent. And between your offspring and hers, he will crush your head and you will strike his heel. So right from Genesis 3, God was declaring the cross. So what I'd like to talk about this morning is I'd like to divide it into three ways. I'd like to look at some of the prophecies of the cross, and then go on to talk about some of the people there at the time of the cross, And then I want to move forward to today and find out and talk about the present day effect of the cross. Because it wasn't just something that happened 2,000 years ago and it just blended into history. The cross has an effect today for every single person, whether you accept that or not. I used to know a man, his name was Bill Gardner. He was a lovely Christian man. We used to call him Mr. Potato Man, which shows you what he looked like, really. But he was a lovely man. And he used to say this: "You might disagree with me, but I'll love you anyway." And some of the things we're going to talk about today, you might disagree with me on, but that's okay. But it doesn't change the fact that what we're going to talk about is from God's point of view, not man's point of view. Because man can have plenty of ideas when it comes to the cross. But that's not what we're really interested in when we're talking about the cross. It's what God has to say. So we've already talked about one of the prophecies of the cross, Genesis 3:15. Let's go to Psalm 22. And as we're reading this, we're going to read the first 18 verses. I want you to remember, and as we read it, this is a medical description of things that would happen to a body going through crucifixion. And then remember this, Psalms was written 1,000 years before the crucifixion was actually nightmared up. So this is why it should speak so powerfully to us. Not only does it tell us about the suffering, but of actions that would happen that day on the cross and the words that were spoken that day on the cross. Psalm 22, verse 1. My God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from saving me, so far from the words of my groaning? Oh my God, I cry out by day, but you do not answer. By night, and I'm not silent. Yet you are enthroned as the Holy One. You are the praise of Israel. In you our fathers put their trust. They trusted you, and you delivered them. They cried to you and were saved. In you they trusted and were not disappointed. But I am a worm and not a man, scorned by men and despised by the people. All who see me mock me. They hurl insults, shaking their heads. He trusts in the Lord. Let the Lord rescue him. Let him deliver him, since he delights in him. Yet you brought me out of the womb. You made me trust in you, even at my mother's breast. From birth I was cast upon you. From my mother's womb you have been my God. Do not be far from me, for trouble is near, and there is no one to help. Many bulls surround me. Strong bulls of Bashan encircle me. Roaring lions tearing their prey open their mouths wide against me. I am poured out like water, and all my bones are out of joint. My heart has turned to wax, it has melted away within me. My strength is dried up like a potsherd, and my tongue sticks to the roof of my mouth. You lay me in the dust of death. Dogs have surrounded me, a band of evil men have encircled me. They have pierced my hands and my feet. I can count all my bones. People stare and gloat over me. They divide my garments among them and cast lots for my clothing. A very graphic description of suffering on the cross. And the words that were said, poured out of Jesus, my God, why have you forsaken me? One who had the closest relationship with his Father that could possibly be. And yet the sufferings of the cross tore those words from him. And around people and their reactions to the cross. Very, very graphic. And yet these words were written over 1,000 years before it actually event happened. Isaiah 53. We're going to read the first 10 verses. Psalm 23 talks about the physical sufferings of the one on the cross. Isaiah 53 becomes a bit more personal. And it's the spiritual sufferings of the one on the cross. I'm going to read the first 10 verses. Who has believed our message? And to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? He grew up before him like a tender shoot and like a root out of dry ground. He had no beauty or majesty to attract us to him. Nothing in his appearance that we should desire him. He was despised and rejected by men. A man of sorrows and familiar with suffering. Like one from whom men hide their faces. He was despised and we esteemed him not. Surely he took up our infirmities and carried our sorrows. Yet we considered him stricken by God, smitten by him and afflicted. But he was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. The punishment that brought us peace was upon him, and by his wounds we are healed. We all like sheep have gone astray. Each of us has turned to his own way, and the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. He was oppressed and afflicted, yet it did not open his mouth. He was led like a lamb to the slaughter, and as a sheep before her shearers is silent, so he did not open his mouth. By oppression and judgment he was taken away. And who can speak of his descendants? For he was cut off from the land of the living. From the transgression of my people he was stricken. He was assigned a grave with the wicked and with the rich in his death. Though he had done no violence, nor was any deceit in his mouth. Yet it was the Lord's will to crush him and cause him to suffer. If you read those words, very powerful words, and yet those words at the end, even more powerful. It was the Lord's will to crush him. The will of his Father. For you and for me. And in that Isaiah, we can read of the spiritual and internal sufferings that without Isaiah 53, we'd know nothing about. We'd never be able to understand or try to comprehend of all that it meant for him on the cross. So there's some of the prophecies about the cross, written hundreds, maybe 1,000 years before the event actually happened, pointing towards that time when the Lord Jesus would suffer on the cross. So let's come forward to the time of the cross. And some of the people that interacted with Jesus around the time of the cross. We're going to spend quite a lot of the readings are in Matthew 27. So if you keep your finger there, we won't go far from it for the next few readings. Firstly, we're going to consider Pilate. A man in authority, a man in charge, a man used to get in his own way. And this is what we read about him in Matthew 27, verses 22 to 24. What shall I do then with Jesus, who is called Christ? Pilate asked. They all answered, crucify him. Why? What crime has he committed? Asked Pilate. But they shouted all the louder, crucify him. When Pilate saw he was getting nowhere, but instead an uproar was starting, he took water and washed his hands in front of the crowd. I am innocent of this man's blood, he said. It is your responsibility. Here's a man, as I say, a man of authority, a man in charge, a man whose word ruled. And yet when it came down to him, despite everything, he was prepared to hand Jesus over and to wash his hands of the situation and say, it's nothing to do with me. A lot of people have the same viewpoint today as Pilate when it comes to the cross. It's not my responsibility. It's nothing to do with me. But in Isaiah 53, we've already read, he was pierced for our transgressions. No one is excluded from that. No one can say, it's nothing to do with me. It's not my responsibility. As Pilate tried to sidestep the issue and to put it onto someone else's shoulders, we can't fall into that category when it comes to the cross. We all are responsible for the cross. It is our sin that Jesus was there for, not his own. Have you ever thought about Barabbas? We don't know much about Barabbas, really, do we? Apart from he wasn't a very nice guy. And he was due to be on the center cross that day. And yet, due to circumstances, he wasn't. But he should have been. It was his sins he was going to pay for on the cross that day. And yet, Jesus stood in his place. Same for me and you, really. Our sins were being paid by someone else. We don't read a lot about Barabbas, but sometimes I get to thinking about what he thought that day, when he thought at the start of that day it was his last. And yet by the end of that day, he was a free man. Same for you and me. At the start of that day, we had no hope. By the end of that day, we had hope. How about the passers-by? It's funny that all we know about them is they are passers-by. We don't know their names. But we know they were at the cross. And it says this in Matthew 27, 39 to 40. It says this. Those who passed by hurled insults at him, shaking their heads and saying, "You who are going to destroy the temple and build it in 3 days, save yourself, come down from the cross, if you are the Son of God." There's a saying, a little knowledge is a dangerous thing. And these passers-by have obviously heard some sort about Jesus. And they took the time to be there, just to hurl insults. And then they passed on by. A lot of people in this world think they know about Jesus. They think they know about Easter and make their judgment accordingly. Those people pass by, taking no little time to understand what was happening on the cross. This Easter, we have the opportunity again to remind ourselves of the cross and to think on it rather than just pass by. About the chief priests, they who should have known better. Matthew 27, 41 to 43 says this. In the same way, the chief priests, the teachers of the law, and the elders mocked him. "He saved others," they said, "but he can't save himself. He's the king of Israel. Let him come down now from the cross and we will believe in him. He trusts in God. Let God rescue him now if he wants him. For he said, 'I am the Son of God.'" Here were people, men, safe in their religion, happy in their religion. They didn't want the boat rocked, and Jesus was rocking the boat big time. What would have happened if Jesus had come down from the cross like they'd asked? Absolutely nothing. Nothing for them, nothing for you and me. It was just words for them. They just wanted him out of the way because he was causing them inconvenience. And maybe we get through Easter like that. We just want him out of the way. We'll fill it with any other thing apart from the cross, apart from Jesus. We just want to get through it and get him out of the way. Safe in our religion, in our good works, in our self-satisfaction. The chief priests were like that. How about the soldiers? 27, 35 to 36 says this. When they had crucified him, they divided up his clothes by casting lots, and sitting down, they kept watch over him there. You know what? They were the closest people to the cross that day. And yet they missed the importance of it completely. Those must have been the hardest words possible. Sitting down, they watched him there. They then gambled for his clothes. Total indifference to what was happening there that day. So close, and yet they missed it completely. And then we have the two thieves. The two thieves, we find, are in the same position for the same reason. And they started off at the same position. Neither was better than the other. They both hurled insults at Jesus. We find that in Matthew 27, 38 and 44, which says this. That wasn't my stomach, if anyone was interested. Two robbers were crucified with him, one on his right and one on the left. Verse 44 says this. In the same way, the robbers who were crucified with him heaped insults on him. Sometimes we forget that when we come to the thieves. They both took time to insult Jesus. There was no difference between them. But something changed. And we read that in Luke 23. They had a few hours on the cross that day. A few hours to either think about themselves and be taken up by themselves, or to actually see what was happening. One of them that day remained thinking of himself, wasting the last hours of his life. The other didn't. It says this in Luke 23. Verses 39 to 43. One of the criminals who hung there hurled insults at him. Aren't you the Christ? Save yourself and us. But the other criminal rebuked him. Don't you fear God, he said. Since you're under the same sentence, we are punished justly, for we are getting what our deeds deserve. But this man has done nothing wrong. Then he said to him, Lord, remember me when you come into your kingdom. Jesus answered him, I tell you the truth, today you will be with me in paradise. I don't know for you how much longer you have on this earth. Blissful ignorance is what I call it. I haven't got a clue how long I've got. You're probably seeing the same thing at the moment. But these men knew they didn't have long. So how did they use the time? One wasted the opportunity. One took the opportunity with both hands. He took time to look at Jesus. He took time to listen to him. And he took time to appreciate there was something different about this one on the center cross. He recognized him as a king. He recognized him as Lord. He recognized that he was innocent of everything. And because of that, Jesus spoke to him. And because of that, I'll meet that thief one day. Amazing it may seem, he didn't have years to live for Jesus. He didn't have years to do great things. He had minutes to do something really important. And he took those minutes, and because of that, he's in paradise. That's what Jesus promised him. Around the cross that day, there were also some of Jesus' followers. Interestingly, not many of the men were there. In fact, we only know about one of the men that actually was there that day. But we have the women named who were there that day. That's how important what they were doing was. That the Bible takes time to name them. And it must have been something really hard for them to see. But they stayed there throughout, at a distance, watching. We read that in both Luke and Matthew. And no matter how hard it was for them to see, they wouldn't leave. That's how they were committed to their Lord. And it may get difficult. And it may get hard as a Christian. But does that mean we have to walk away? Or take the easy option? Take the soft path? Those women stayed that day and witnessed everything. And their names were written in God's word. But finally, we're going to read the words of a man who had every excuse to miss the opportunity, as the soldiers did. He was as hardened as them, in fact, harder than those soldiers, because he was in charge. He'd have seen and witnessed and taken part in many, many crucifixions. And yet that day was something different. And we read his words in Matthew 27, verse 54. And it says this. He said this, "Surely this man was the Son of God." Here was a man who had every excuse to miss what was happening that day. A hardened man, a tough man. And yet, when he heard the things Jesus said and saw what happened, his conclusion was, this man was the Son of God. Absolutely no doubt for that man. Interestingly enough, when we think about the cross, we think of reconciliation. But I find the biggest thing that we think of when it comes to the cross is division. You either one point of view or the other when it comes to the cross. On that day, surrounding the cross, there were people who were divided by what was happening to the one on the center cross. They were divided by the person on the center cross. And things haven't changed from that day to this. The one thing that divides people is the cross. And Pilate's words are the one thing that divides people today. What will I do with Jesus called Christ? That is still the central question that every single one of us has to answer, whether we choose to ignore it or not. That's the one question we have to deal with. Right up until the present day. And we're going to read about some of the verses that tell us about the present effects, present day effects of the cross. And 1 Corinthians chapter 1 is where we're going to go next. And we're going to read verses 18 and 23 and 24. 1 Corinthians 1, 18, 23 and 24 says this. For the message of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing. But to us who are being saved, it is the power of God. Verse 23. But we preach Christ crucified, a stumbling block to those, both to the Jews and foolishness to the Gentiles. But those whom God has called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ, the power of God, and the wisdom of God. The cross is the dividing point. It's foolishness to those who won't believe. It's a stumbling block to the Jews. But for those who are being saved, it is the power of God. There's a dividing point. Do we see it as foolishness, or do we see it as God's power? Is it a stumbling block to us, or something that raises us up? It's a dividing point. If you went out on the high street of Marlow today, you'd have different views of the cross from different people. But in effect, one side or the other. And our last verse is Galatians 2:20. When I've been brought up, this verse was always part quoted. It's probably the most part-quoted verse I've ever heard. Because you always hear, the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. But that's only part of the verse. That's the nice part of the verse. The good part of the verse for me. But Galatians 2:20 says this. I have been crucified with Christ, and I no longer live, but Christ lives in me. The life I live in the body, I live by faith in the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me. The cross has to have an effect in my life. Here in 2018. It's an identification point. I have been crucified with Christ. My sin kept him on the cross. And I am identifying with that. And now I live by faith in that point, in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself to me. So, two questions as we finish. This Easter, when it comes to the cross, on which side of the division do I stand? And secondly, am I ready to stand daily and be identified with Christ? Yeah.